Welcome to the Miles Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Miller. I have the pleasure of interviewing our guest today, John Waldman. John is the author of the book Swimming Aimlessly, which is about male infertility and navigating this journey. He's an avid Winnipeg Jets fan, as well as an infertility advocate, and John resides in Winnipeg, Canada. Well, welcome, John. Yeah, absolutely. It's awesome having you here. And the question I always typically ask everyone, or has started to ask everyone, is how did you learn about infertility in general? And then how do you learn about male infertility?
Honestly, it was sort of trial by fire. I mean, I was very much like most people, you know, they didn't get any sort of education in school. I mean, we sort of heard about test tube babies and that kind of thing when I was in elementary school, but there really wasn't much explanation to it. You know, you just sort of had this image conjure up of a fetus sitting in a test tube, literally, but, you know, we didn't have any discussion about it in sex ed classes in high school and university. There wasn't much talk about it. It was all, everything that you were being, that was being talked about either in student groups or when I was in residence, was purely about wearing condoms and safe sex, not anything to do with how, what you're doing both in and out of sexual activity can affect your ability to have a child later on in life. So it really was that once we started trying and we had trouble conceiving was really where we learned more about it. I mean, before then, you know, I started to learn more about infancy loss and miscarriages, but it sort of was had the that feeling of that it was just a part of what happens. I didn't know the statistics about it being 1 in 4 cases at the time, but we started to know that infertility was a larger thing. I had cousins, even when I was younger, that didn't have kids, and there was no real discussion as to why that was. It was just either you did or didn't in my mind. Not that there were extenuating circumstances behind it. I really started to get more of a picture of male factor infertility as we were going through our journey as well. And really, this was back in 2009 or so when we started to really go through a lot of the trials and tribulations. And back then, as odd as it sounds, because it wasn't that long ago, there was still the perception that fertility was a female thing. Obviously, there's things that can go wrong in the male body as well, but there hadn't been as much depth into it and discovery of what could be causing male factor, what could be possible solutions. So when I was told that I had a lower morphology in my sperm, which was contributing to our overall fertility issues, it was sort of at a standstill. You know, there wasn't anything that was solidly prescribed, like a medication or anything like that. There wasn't any advice other than just change your diet and let's see what happens. I ended up going to my wife was at a traditional Chinese acupuncturist. I had a couple sessions where I just talked about what are the things that I could be doing. So taking certain natural substances, etc. But really, yeah, everything surrounding the issues on my side was more about getting in better shape and taking supplements that were nature-based rather than something that had been explored through the scientific community.
Yeah, and it's funny you talk about supplements, because I think as men, like, we try to find the, you know, ways to fix it. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, I noticed even with my own journey with it, searching, you know, and trying to find evidence based, you know, I just, like, that's a big thing. They want to make sure, like, I'm not just taking it to take it, but just evidence based supplements, you know, and even then you have to kind of look at the research. But I know in your book, you talked about maca root and how awful that was for you. And I know, like, I think I took it for, I don't know, a period of time. I don't know how much it did, but I took it in a capsule form, but I think you did the powder or something like that. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if you want to talk about that as more like a body take of infertility, about the supplements.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that you hit on, is that we have to have a sense of humor when we're talking about infertility in the first place. Is that, like any other thing that you're going through, be it cancer, be it any other thing that's a traumatic thing that's going on in your life, you do have to keep a little bit of a sense of humor around it. You have to be able to find that ability to stay sane, as it were, and just be able to laugh at the situation a little bit. Otherwise, you're just going to send yourself into a major downward spiral and really get yourself even isolated more than the feeling already is. So, in going through the natural route, I was told to, you know, try out maca root. It has a number of different health benefits, and I went to a local health food store, and the person who I spoke to there said that she has a spoonful of maca root every morning. She sometimes has it raw, she sometimes puts on cereal and all that kind of stuff. So I figured, why not? The first time I had it, it's literally congealed as soon as it entered my mouth, and I discovered that any liquid makes it just form this gloop, is the best way to put it scientifically, that it's really just, it becomes a substance and there's no way to get it to lighten up or anything like that. So it was quite possibly the worst tasting thing that I've ever had. And suffice to say, I've had some bad cooking in my life. But really, it was not something that I found was helpful at all. I tried later on to put it on cereal or put it into some of the food that I was making, etc., and it just did nothing. That was one that I promptly disposed of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember taking a number of supplements and stuff, and it's like you said, you're just trying to establish some control, you know, like some control in your life. And you know, that was something that, you know, was, you know, like we could do, you know, like even though there may be small limited studies, but and one of the other questions I wanted to ask, and this is something that's been actually on my mind, is like, how much do you think that as men, like we don't typically talk about the infertility or family building journey at all. And we do have that narrative that's historically passed down from generation to generation about, you know, fertility being a woman's issue. How much do you feel that, since men aren't really talking about it, how much does that perpetuate the narrative that it's a female issue?
It certainly does. And it's funny, when I was speaking to a few guys talking and in the research for the book and talking with a couple of medical experts, the opinion that was given out on the medical side was that there's been little research done into male factor and fertility, but one researcher who I was talking with said that she spoke with doctors who found that who had the opinion that men don't want to be poked and prodded down there, so why bother, sort of thing. The funny thing in contrast with that is that when I spoke to any guy about it, they said, do as you need, poke, prod, examine, whatever needs to be done, because they want to make sure that they can get their family going forward. So when you have this perpetuating stereotype that men don't want to be involved, that they don't want to be examined, that they don't want to be poked and prodded, it only makes it worse. I mean, let's face it, regardless of gender, nobody wants to have to go through the medical procedures that happen for any reason. But let's face it, when it comes to things that are important as having kids, etc., you're willing to do whatever it takes in the vast majority of cases. I mean, obviously, we all have our limits to what we'll do. Some people will say that, no, I don't want to do IVF. Some people will say, no, I don't, you know, want to go through X, Y, or Z process. But at the same time, you know, the overwhelming amount will say that even if I don't want to do something now, I may want to do it later. It's worth knowing a little bit more. So yeah, do whatever needs to be done, and let's see if we can find a solution. If not for now, for later.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know Renee Almeling actually wrote a book called Gynecology, but she spells it GUY, but she talks about the missing science of reproductive health for men. And it highlights the, you know, the plethora of research that is done for women compared to the amount of research done for andrology, you know, to examine, you know, male reproductive health as well. It's a great book. If anybody reads it, I'll put a link to it in the show notes. I wanted to, I guess, move forward with, okay, you find out your diagnosis. What was, like, when you found out that you had male infertility, what was that experience like?
It was honestly a very freezing moment, and it was both male and female, and female factor for my family. But it was, okay, what is it that I might have done earlier in my life that might have caused it? You know, I can remember playing street hockey and getting hit in the nether regions and not wearing a cup. Did that affect it? Was it something that was passed down genetically? What, you know, what was the reason for it, and how could I correct it? Or is it something that was beyond fix? When our doctor said that, you know, it's not that, that in my case, at least, because I wasn't in a full out red zone for morphology, that I was able to potentially correct it with a little bit of change, I said, yeah, absolutely, I'll do whatever's needed to give us a better shot. But yeah, there's, I think, once we started to get into deeper conversations, and once we joined our fertility support group, is where I really started to learn more and see what the stories were. I mean, we had people in our group that had zero sperm count whatsoever. So certainly there are worse places that we could have been. So going through all that certainly made it a lot less fearsome. And as I was able to do those corrective things, as minor as they were, it certainly gave me a better feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you find other men that have gone through it and listen to their stories. Mm-hmm. And see some, I mean, and every journey is different, but you find those similarities of like, oh, no, I totally can get where you're coming from, you know, and get that experience to say, hey, I'm not alone in this, you know, where it is, can be very isolating. And it is not something you typically would bring up, you know, like with a disenrolled conversation, especially when you have, you're in that age group of that cohort of ages where we're building families and you see everybody else, you know, being able to achieve pregnancy, have kids and stuff. So it's something that's kind of hard to bring up when you see other people that haven't struggled. And I think that's one of the reasons why I think we don't talk about, because we've had this mentality that they're not going to understand. And I think on some level they don't, you know, like, because truly 100% know what that's like, you know, you really should have to go through it. I mean, not should, but you know, you have to be in their shoes, you know, to fully understand. But
no, 100%.
But there's also, I feel like there's more education that can be done on that to kind of build empathy and awareness.
100%. And a lot of it comes down to that basics, that unless you're going through this kind of struggle, it's not something you are going to completely understand. I mean, this isn't something that can universally happen, as it were. You know, if someone loses a job, that's easy for people to talk about, because at one point or another, the majority of the population will be either laid off, be fired, be downsized, whatever you want to say. That's a reality of working in 99% of cases. Right. But having something like this, where it's one in six couples that struggle with infertility, it's a high number, but it's still less than 20% of the population that goes through that. So trying to explain to somebody who's had two or three kids and trying to get them to understand, you know, why you're feeling like you are, why you're reluctant to do family things with them, etc., it's a little bit harder. And it goes back to what you were saying before, that we're not taught this at all in post-secondary ed or in high school, etc. If there were more conversations that started then and more awareness to it, it certainly would help and make people come into these situations where they encounter somebody they'll have a better sense of what it is that they might be going through. You know, it could be as simple as even doing, you know, when you're doing a sex ed units, you know, to have somebody, have a speaker come in and talk about what they went through and the trials and tribulations, it would make the conversation a lot easier. And at some point, you know, they'll, you know, in the future, they would either recognize it within themselves or if they see one of their friends or relatives going through it, they'll have a better rudimentary understanding of what it is that they might be going through.
Yeah. And this is exactly the point that I try to make, especially mm-hmm. within like social work, psychology and counseling, you know, the helping professions, because there is a lack of mental health professionals that are aware of this. I mean, that's another topic, but
yeah.
It's something where, I mean, all of us are going to either know somebody that's been affected by infertility or miscarriage or both, or difficulties with family building, or we're going to have that personal experience. Ooh. It's highly likely, you know, like that we're going to know somebody or have that personal experience. So not that it will take away the emotional pain, but this provides yeah. that awareness and that education, because we all hear the you should just adopt, or you should just relax, yeah. or you should, you know, like we're...
Yeah.
They're not helpful, you know?
No, definitely not.
So, yeah, I think we definitely need more education and awareness, and especially within post-secondary, you know, at least graduate level, especially for future clinicians out there, that, you know, we really need to be talking about this. I have at least an idea, you know, like if you want to specialize in it, great. Yeah, but if you're not, yeah. at least you have that rough idea of what this experience might be like. So speaking of experience, if you could... talk about like what you found out your issue with infertility. What were your next steps? Like, what were the procedures? Did you do IUI? And you did IVF at some point. I mean, what were your next steps?
It was like that deeper look. So, you know, doing the going into the little room and doing as I needed to do. Then it was, yeah, starting on some of the medications first. So we tried letrozole and Clomid. We did do a round of IUI. And ultimately, we're told by our local office that it was up to us what we did next, which wasn't helpful. So at that point, we really started to talk more with the people in our support group and see, okay, what are our options? And at that point, the solution was simple. We had to go somewhere else. So we started to consider the possibilities. One was to go to Fargo, North Dakota, which is about 3.5 hour drive from Winnipeg, to do something in the States, or we heard that people had been going to Cancun to have the procedure. Other people were going overseas. Ultimately, for us, though, we wanted to stay in Canada, partly because of obviously our healthcare system.
Yeah.
Even though the vast majority of our expenses weren't covered as part of it, but still just to be somewhere that was a little bit more familiar in case anything happened, you know, we had at least our local medical coverage. So we ended up deciding on Victoria, BC, which is about a 24-hour drive from Winnipeg. And it was partly based on that they were doing more investigative research into the causes of the root factors for various infertility issues. For us, yeah. they were able to tab fairly quickly that it was due to pre-existing conditions and ongoing conditions for my wife. But they were able to find the best drug protocol that would be able to assist us. So we ended up packing up our car, we packed up our dog, much of our house for about a month, and lived out in Victoria, BC, had the procedure, and it was from there that IVF ended up resulting in our daughter.
Awesome. And I think that in itself highlights the importance of self-advocacy.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times people get to IVF clinics and they're not fully satisfied, but they're like, well, it's close. You know, like, you know, we don't want to, you know, go farther, but you need to also self-advocate, because this is essentially your life. This is you're trying to build your family and going somewhere that you feel like is a good fit for you. You know, I know our own personal experience, we had two clinics locally in Wisconsin that we went to and weren't feeling it. You know, like it was just not a good fit. And we ended up in going to Missouri, which was a 5-hour drive. So, and for us, that was doable. It was long, but I mean, 24 hours is a lot longer than 5 hours, but like, it's just to go to show about self-advocating, in doing your research, with clinics and making sure, that it's a good fit. And every style is different, because I know one of the clinics we had, it was more of like you saw multiple doctors, and that was just not a fit for us. Cause like we wanted to have like one doctor that really knew us and knew our story. And to some people that may not be what they want. They want to have multiple doctors. And, but it's really recognizing like that, trying to find that clinic that's a good fit and has good success as well.
No, 100%. And I think that it's easy for us to get caught up in this feeling that there's only one solution or one way that we're going to get suggested, especially when you look at the number of corporate chains, as it were, that are popping up now and they're in the fertility sphere. I mean, I've seen in doing my research, I saw, that there were some in the States that I think had in excess of a dozen clinics. So when you look at, it's easy to sort of feel defeated when you're thinking that, okay, there's only a couple solutions by me, or there's only a couple solutions that will be affiliated to me and reachable. But the honest truth is that the fertility issue is a global problem. And it is not one that is a one-stop solution for everybody, as we all know. But it is easy to get caught up in that mindset when you're in the throes of having tried a couple things locally or being told one thing by one doctor. The ultimate thing that is always advised is when you get any kind of diagnosis and are given a possible track to a solution, is that you get a second opinion. Let's say that you have plumbing issues in your house. You're not just going to go to the first plumber that you talk to. You're going to get a couple people coming in to give you quotes or to have a look if possible. Right. So much the same way, you have to explore. You have to look at what are the true options. Are all the procedures worth it? Is it worth it? Worthwhile for me to try IUI, or should I go straight to IVF, or should I be looking at surrogacy? Should I be looking at just at adoption, or what's, what is the best method for us? And ultimately, there's no one right way to go about it.
Right. Yeah. And that's like a personal level decision of like what route you take too. Cause I remember we were in the adoption route, and then like we had literally just asked ourselves at one night, if when we're 60, 70 years old, like, are we going to regret trying for our own kids? And for us, like that would have been a regret that we didn't try, and that's not every situation. That was just us, and nothing to dismiss adoption. Adoption's a wonderful thing for sure. But just, it's a really personal decision about how you, like what route you take.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, because in your book, something that really kind of struck me, and something that I personally had literally thought about, and was a huge part of the struggle for me, was you talked about men's thoughts and the idea of their family tree ending in regards to experience infertility. So for example, if I don't have kids, my family tree ends, I don't know if you could talk a little bit more about that, and what your thoughts are.
Yeah, so it was definitely something that was weighing on my mind, because there's never a guarantee with anybody else in your family that A, they're going to have kids, B, get married, etc. But even beyond that, that's the way that they're going to carry forward the lineage is going to be in the way that you would envision it. I mean, everybody has their own unique story, and especially if you're an only child, you have that feeling of, I don't want this branch of the tree to end. For me, I have a sister, and she has two kids as well. But, in a certain respect, there's a lot of things that you feel that you want to not only have for yourself, but to have for your parents that always wanted to have grandkids, or that you were the fun cousin or the fun uncle to others in your family. You want them to have that same experience back to you. So there's certainly a huge aspect of that, especially if you come from a family that has those good fortunes to have a family that's close together, that has all these different aspects of being a true family unit. And even in cases where you don't have that, I mean, a lot of us become the honorary uncles and aunts for your friends' kids, and the hope is that they will be the same for you. So there, you do get that sense of family and of larger community that you want to continue to be part of.
Right. Yeah, and that in itself, I mean, affects probably family relationships too, and especially Absolutely. If you have another sibling that already has kids and you're struggling with infertility. I mean, I've seen that many times where that's really just such a hard thing to go through, and that ambivalence, right? It's that I'm happy for you, I'm sad for me, you know?
Yeah.
So what were some of the challenges? I mean, like, and how did you cope with the stress of going through IVF? And you know, we all know it's a roller coaster of emotions, but I'm just curious about your experience with, like, how did you cope with the stress of fertility treatments?
For me, it ultimately was that I ended up going on antidepressants / anti-anxiety medication and speaking with counselors. And it was partly because I had already had pre-existing conditions where I needed to have been doing that before, and unfortunately had not been properly taking my care of myself in that regard. But knowing my mentality and knowing how bad I was getting, that I needed to ask for help. And we all know as men, it's the last thing we ever want to do is ask for help from anybody. So it was not an easy experience. And admittedly today, it's still not the thing that I jumped to first. But I think that it was a very necessary step to carry forward in any regard, you know, especially when you're doing something as game-changing as IVF, because it's not a simple procedure like IUI where you wait for the right day and then you go and do the piece, maybe have some medications alongside it. IVF is a much more involved process, as we all know. And especially in cases like ours, where you're about to travel and be away from home, be away from a lot of the supports, you know, you have to be ready for a great journey in the very physical sense. So in order to be ready for that physical journey, you have to be ready for the emotional journey. You have to be ready for the mental journey that you're going to take as well. And it was essential for everybody to be on the same page. It's essential for everybody to be thinking the same way. Because if there's any sort of hesitation, if there's any sort of question, if there's any sort of fears that aren't expressed, there's just going to be either regret, there's going to be remorse, there's going to be animosity. So it really is a team effort. It's really something that, you know, you can't take yourself out of the equation. And unfortunately, guys often do. They take their own thoughts away from what should be done, what ought to be done, etc., and concentrate on their wives. But there are times where we need to be able to make sure that our feelings are felt too. And before we can talk about it, you have to be able to recognize within yourself what your own mentality is, where your mental health is, and what part of the decision-making you're going to have.
Yeah, I think speaking on, like, seeking a mental health professional, it's also worthwhile to find one that actually knows about infertility. You know, which I know it's few and far between, you know, like, I don't know what it's like in Canada, but at least in the United States, it really depends on the state you're in. You know, I know in Wisconsin, I think we maybe have 5 people that are, like, kind of specialized in this field. Mm-hmm. It's helpful. Not that other counselors, like, don't fully, I mean, a lot of times I think what we find is people that go into, like, a regular mental health practitioner or clinician, a lot of times we're educating them, you know, about infertility and IVF, and sometimes it's not helpful. And we often see people leaving, you know, like, their mental health practice to find somebody that kind of specializes in it. Through that therapy, though, like, what were some of those strategies that you kind of developed to help in those tough moments?
I don't think that there was a particular strategy other than just the baseline of listening to each other, taking a little bit more of being more mindful of your own self and being aware of when you need to take a break and being and build and let yourself feel like it's okay to take a break. It's okay to say that I need to leave this room or leave this situation. The other part of it, of course, is that you have to make other people aware around you of what's going on. And that was as hard as anything, you know, first to talk to my wife about it, but then to talk to my family and my friends, my work, about what we were going through and how it might be affecting the way that I've been behaving and the way I might and what might be happening down the road. Certainly you can't exist in this sort of vacuum and let yourself be your own on this island, because we all have a large number of interactions that we have on a regular basis. We have a large number of possibilities of what we may encounter any day. So we just have to be able to not necessarily wear, you know, like an armband that says I'm infertile, but at the same time, you have to be able to have people to be ready for yourself for situations. And you have to be able to talk to be ready for when certain questions arise and be able to approach them properly.
Yeah. And that I feel is also, when you talk about family, that's also a missing piece, I think, for fertility, because we do focus on people going through infertility, and we should, by all means.
Yeah.
But I know, I've had some coworkers that have asked me, you know, hey, my, daughter or my son and daughter-in-law, are doing IVF. What tips do you have as a parent? Yeah. You know, because that's the generation before us, that IVF was in its infancy, doing some of them probably, it's not aware, they don't have an awareness of it, or have that experience as well. So I think that's another thing that I would love to have grandparent, come in and stuff and talk about, what was it like for them, to see their child go through infertility.
Absolutely. I think
that's not another aspect. So you guys were successful with IVF, mm-hmm. and your book is wonderful. Honestly, it just really kind of intrigued me. And one of the things you talked about was feeling secondary on Father's Day.
Yes.
Talk more about that, because I think that's a lot of men probably feel that same way.
Yeah, it was definitely the day that hit hardest. And I think most people will recognize that Father's Day, historically doesn't have the lineage that Mother's Day does. And in a way it is very secondary to Mother's Day in general, but just going through Father's Day and seeing my friends being celebrated on Facebook and things like that, it hit harder. And there were times that I would just take a full vacation from social media on those days. Or I would say to my family, do you mind if we play down our any sort of get together that we'd be doing, and a lot of it was because I didn't want to be going, say, to a restaurant and seeing young dads with young kids or anything like that. But it certainly, I think that there isn't enough of a recognition of that impact, and certainly it's a little bit better now than it was when I was in the throes, because there's more awareness now in general of how men are dealing with or not dealing with fertility well. And there's a better understanding that guys are impacted just as much as women are, in different ways, of course, but it hits just as hard. So for men, for groups to now be talking to men and saying, we know what you're feeling and we know what you're going through, is a good start, but there definitely has to be a little bit better awareness in general, and recognition within families that if your daughter or your daughter-in-law is suffering a lot, your son or son-in-law is suffering a lot as well. So definitely an eye on that, especially on days like Father's Day, is extremely important.
Yeah, and I just remember back in the day when we would go to church on Sundays and stuff, because they're always on a Sunday.
Yeah,
and I just remember vividly watching church to say all the mothers stand up, right, or all the fathers stand up, to be recognized and stuff. And then when you're there and that's not you, that's a really tough feeling, and it's just further isolating. I'm like, yep, I'm the only one, And I know that the ritual art churches have gotten a lot better with that, you know, of recognizing, you know, that this day is tough for some people. It's some days it could be a great day for people. It's going to be tough. And I actually had listened to, it was a podcast, and it was the Mental Illness Happy Hour or Mental Health Happy Hour or something. It's out of Ireland. And they were talking about Mother's Day and how when your experience doesn't match what the typical Mother's Day looks like, it's really disenfranchised grief.
Yeah.
You know, like that, your experience, like, well, this is Mother's Day. We should be celebrating your mother. And I'm like, but they really challenged that of saying, like, yes, like we do celebrate our parents, you know, on those days, but we can also be hurt, you know, that day as well and be struggling.
Absolutely. And it's something that's, you know, like I said, it's a feeling that is changing. The actions around it are changing, but it's a slow change. It's not something that's going to happen overnight.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you talked about like challenges after being successful, because I think people have this idea, at least, I mean, not necessarily in the fertility, in the family building world, but people outside of it, they have this idea that, oh, you got pregnant, you're with your, you know, you did IVF, you're successful, great, everything goes away, right? And that's not the case, it stays with you. So what were some of the challenges that you had regarding your infertility after being successful?
The question first and foremost always comes up is whether you have another kid. And I've known people that have had fertility issues at first, and then they, for whatever reason, end up being successful naturally afterward. So you start to look at, you know, you I guess that's, you sort of go back to square one. And if you want to have a second kid, you go through that trial. And unfortunately for a lot of people, it's the trial and error. For me, I was more inclined to count my blessings, but we did try to have IVF again, and unfortunately it was unsuccessful. We miscarried, or as I say, my wife miscarried. But certainly the mentality changes in a way. For me, you know, I already knew that that's everything going forward was going to be different. I knew that, that celebrating my daughter was going to mean a lot more when we had her baby naming, that having those conversations was going to be a little bit easier, even because when you're post IVF, when you're post the struggle, or at least the initial struggle, it's easier to talk about it as it's something in the past. And quite frankly, the conversations that I've had with people, either introductory or just happenstance, you know, chatting at a park or something like that, it's easier for me to talk about our fertility journey now than it was when you're in the middle of it, because there's that sense of accomplishment that has already happened. So it makes it a lot less hard to talk about what's in the now versus what's in the then. So it made things immeasurably easier, but at the same time, you feel those deficiencies. You feel like if we wanted to have another kid, that we would have to go through another journey, or we would have to go through another process, etc. So you're still feeling that deficiency in one form or another.
Right. Yeah, and I can remember, and I still do to this day, and it's gotten a lot better. But yeah, I remember being out in errands, like running errands or going to the store, right? And you see those families with four or five kids.
Yeah.
And you make that assumption that they never struggled, you know, and granted, I don't know. Like, I don't know if they all adopt, you know, like I have no idea, but it's like you have that perception of like, you know, they have four or five kids, like, and like we were fortunate to have twin boys, but you're right. Like, it is something that you think about, is like we have to go through this again if we want another child, you know. Yeah. And it's a little bit easier, especially if you have, you know, additional embryos that are frozen, you know, so it's not the full-blown cycle, but some people have to do the full-blown cycle again, and it's just a tough journey.
Absolutely.
So one last question I want to ask, and this is something I ask everybody, every guest on here, is what is something that you would want every man to know about going through infertility?
I think the most important thing to know is that you're not going through this alone. And a lot of times, like at the very basic level, you feel isolated from your friends, from your family, from your coworkers, etc., when you're going through this kind of procedure. But more so, you have to know that there are the avenues available to you. There's more Facebook groups now than when I was in the deepest parts of infertility, both for general and specific to men. There are routes through Instagram. There's support groups available through so many different means that are available to you, whether it's Resolve or Fertility Matters Canada or other informal organizations that provide in-person support, etc. Just know that the numbers are true, that it is 1 in 6 couples that suffer through infertility issues. And when you look at that number, I mean, it's very easy to start to pluck out how many people out of from your high school yearbook are going through the same thing that you are at a base level. I think that it is important, though, that you recognize that and then action it. And whether you do it in an anonymous form, such as a message board online, or if you do something as crazy as I did and start talking about it in media, the number one way that you're going to be able to get through it is to recognize that you aren't alone, and then to be able to talk about it. And as hard as it is just to open up, but you do have to open up, and you do have to be ready to have those extreme moments of craziness where you feel like you're just going to break down emotionally, and just know that it's okay because you end up getting through it one way or another.
Yeah. And there's actually a lot of research that shows that by giving back, it actually helps you kind of process your infertility journey.
Absolutely.
And that was something that when I read that, like that hit home to me because that was like right in the throw of right when I started my MSW program at UW-Madison. Yeah. Because they said, like, you know, you come in having this idea of what you want to do, and it may change. And exactly. It made me start thinking about, like, what can I do with this experience? And they said, like, and it helped me make sense of, like, why did I have this? Why did I experience infertility? And it launched me into doing more advocacy and talking about it, like, within social work, you know, psychology, sure, counseling. But it's also providing that awareness, right? That it's male infertility. And it's ironically enough at work now, people know me as, hey, if I have fertility, I can talk to him.
Absolutely. You know?
And it's crazy because one of my coworkers had said something where, like, it was two mutual coworkers, and I was talking to one of them, and the other one had asked my coworker Katie and stuff. And she said, like, you're not having fertility issues, are you? Like, why are you talking to Steve? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. And like, but she's like, no, we're just friends and stuff. But it's like, I appreciate that, you know, being known as, like, okay, yeah, I can talk to him. I've had people, I mean, it just highlights how prevalent it is, because everyone I've talked to have, like, either had experienced miscarriage or know somebody has some people in my work have been a surrogate. You know, it's like, people feel like that's so uncommon. It's not, you know, like, have had infertility, like, or they had secondary infertility, you know, like, you always hear these stories. We have these people, these silos of stories.
Yeah.
And it's about bringing all those stories together to help reduce some of that stigma, you know, because Brené Brown, I don't know if you know who she is, but she's a social worker in Texas, right? Very well known, lots of good books. And in one of the books, I want to say it's Darren Grayley, she talks about how the only way we reduce stigma or shame is by normalizing the situation, and we do that through conversation.
Yeah.
100%. So that is, so anybody that's struggling with it, like, and I can understand if you're in the middle of it, in the throes of infertility, but afterwards, if you're struggling, like, reach out, tell your story. Uh-huh. It's so helpful for other men to hear what you have, you know, like, what your experience was, because what I was looking for, right, I was more interested in the mental health piece, was that normal experience. There was nothing, you know, like, there was hardly anything out there. It was all medical based knowledge. So I had no idea what my situation, if what I was feeling was completely normal or not, you know? So I would just throw it out to all the guys out there that are struggling with that. Feel free to share, you know, like, your experience. I know that's hard, and you have to get to a point where you're okay with that, but it can be so helpful for not only yourself, but for other people.
100%. 100% agree with you.
So, well, I think we can wrap it up. And I really, John, I really appreciate your time in talking. Love the discussion. Love what you're doing up there in Canada. And you've been just in the United States as well. I know you've done a number of talks here and TED Talks and stuff. I hope we can continue having, you know, being able to be advocates together, you know, in this really important topic. And as cliche as my podcast says, the miles long journey, because it really is a journey. It's not a sprint.
Yeah.
It's not, it's a marathon. So I really appreciate the time that you gave us today.
For sure. And thank you for having me on. And thank you for being a voice in the community. It is so needed.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will share his social media on the show notes, and we'll be posting it on Instagram, Twitter, I think are the main ones I think that you're on.
Yeah.
And yeah, we will be in touch and have a great rest of your day. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Miles Podcast. I hope you really enjoyed my talk with John Waldman, who is the author of Swimming Aimlessly. I highly recommend you buying that book. If you could, please like, subscribe, and comment on whatever platform you use to help other men and couples find this podcast. The podcast is available on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Anchor, or Overcast. And if you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, you can be reached at any of my social media platforms or email, which is themilespodcast@gmail.com. And I want to leave you with this and something that I mentioned in the episode. The only way we can reduce stigma and shame is by normalizing the experience, and we do this through conversation. And that's by Brené Brown. So I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day and continue on this miles-long journey. Thanks.